This is Steve McLeod, and you are listening to Bootstrapped, the podcast for people running bootstrapped software companies. In episode 211, I'm joined by frequent guest Paldi, founder of Balsamiq. We talk about some ways to strengthen company culture in a fully remote team. We talk about advice that Paldi often gives to first-time entrepreneurs. And we talk about why Paldi might finally start with traditional product marketing 14 years after he launched his product. Welcome back, Paldi.
Hi, thanks for having me. Actually, I want to get something on the record for Ed specifically, which is that I was not one of the people that contacted Steve while you were out to try to replace you. I just want to make sure it's clear.
Okay, I will verify that as true. So now that leaves the question, who were the mystery people?
Backstabbing bastards.
Hey, Paldi, for those who haven't listened to previous episodes and don't know about you, can you give us the short version of who you are and what Balsamiq is?
Sure. My name is Paldi. I am the founder and CEO of Balsamiq. We make a low-fidelity wireframing tool. We have been around since 2008, and we are positively boring, finally. But we are trucking along, and we're hoping to stay around for several generations.
Here's how not to get our listeners anticipating what comes next. Positively boring. Come on, your business is anything but that. But why do you say that? Why do you say positively boring?
Well, the people are finally leaving us alone with our customers and our product. We are no longer on Hacker News. We're no longer getting interviewed left and right in the press, which was a very big distraction in the first years when we were growing really fast. Now things are more stable and we can focus on our craft.
I like that. So nobody really wants to do a press article about a stable business more than a decade old that's grown by a few percent annually, et cetera, right?
Yeah. And yeah. I remember the first years I was telling my wife, I cannot wait until we're boring.
Well, I'm almost like, it's my big worry in life is, oh, I don't want to live a boring life. I want to do interesting things. And you're going the opposite way. I understand, though, a boring business is a beautiful business.
Well, boring to others, right? We are, we love just working on our thing, you know, talking to our customers and improving things a little by little. And
now, just about Balsamiq for listeners again who came in late, it's 30 something people and it's highly profitable, but growth is modest. It's a, like you say, it's in a boring, stable position.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you were kind enough to send me a draft version of Balsamiq's 2021 summary, a newsletter that says what you did in 2021, and it's remarkably open and detailed at what goes on. I think it was 7 or 8 pages. And there's a few things I read in that summary that made me curious, and I want to ask you about these things today. Curious because they apply to where I am in my business.
Sure.
Let's start with this quote. Running a remote-first, geographically distributed, micro-multinational like ours takes a lot of effort. Now, this is kind of where I'm heading in my own business. Last year, I hired a developer who lives in Greece, and just last week, I hired a marketer who lives in Prague. And there are different locations, and they don't really have that chance to bond that you get when you work in the same office. So I'd love to know more about the takes a lot of effort part of that quote. In your opinion, what efforts should I be doing to ensure that our team is harmonious and productive, and yet still they all enjoy their work?
Sure. Well, you know, the effort definitely has different aspects to it. One is the purely bureaucratic effort. Once you have people in multiple countries, you have to make sure you abide to the local country's laws, and they're always changing. And so, you know, you need to work with local accountants and payroll people and lawyers, etc. So that's a lot of effort, more bureaucratic. But I guess what you're asking about is how do you keep a distributed workforce motivated as a working as a single team? So it takes a lot of effort to do that. Becomes easier with time because as people work together more and more, they get to learn each other and become more friends and more connected. And together you will create a company culture that will strengthen over time. One thing that has happened for us is that we haven't hired anybody in the last 2 years. And that has been super beneficial because there's no new people that need to find their own place, or existing employees have to start delegating things. And there's sort of it's like cells moving within other cells, you know, those animations. So as things stabilize, the culture grows stronger naturally. That said, you do have to put in place, you have to work at it. So we have done so many things over the years to help with this remote loneliness. We did something called Friday Fun Times, where every Friday we would put four people at random in the company in a Zoom meeting, and they could talk about weekend plans, right? That way you get to know some of your colleagues that you don't normally work with. And we did that for a couple of years. Then people got bored. So you always have to do new programs. One thing we did was people would create a little Pechacucha presentation.
So what is that?
Oh, it's a format. It's a PowerPoint format where you have something like 20 slides that automatically move forward every 30 seconds. So the whole thing is maybe 7 minutes long. So it's always the same length and the same format. And then we had people I did one taking photos around my house so that I showed people, this is where I have breakfast, this is where I work, et cetera, et cetera. And then people did something about their past or their family, basically anything that they wanted to do that was personal. And they shared that with the whole company. And that was lovely. We got to know each other much better that way. It got, some of those kind of got emotional and intimate. It was beautiful. So we did a round of that, and then we got bored with that. Then we did there's so many different things that you can do to foster a sense of belonging, a sense of unity, even remotely. We do these virtual retreats where we do 80s aerobics dancing together, which is hilarious because, you know, we're almost dead at the end. Or we did a facials. Everybody would put like honey and lemon on their faces together. It just fun things that have nothing to do with proper work, but that strengthen our bonds. And one thing that we like to do is kind of create inside jokes. You know what I mean? Because those really help you understand how other people react. And so then when you're just in Slack chatting and someone says something that could be interpreted as rude, you understand, oh, no, you know, they're just joking. You know, this is something that they do. It just helps tremendously, even for actual work.
Under normal circumstances, i.e. no global pandemic, you probably would be able to do regular in-person events.
Yeah, we always did one week a year with the whole company somewhere. We would rent a house, then when we got too big, we would go to a hotel or a resort. But yeah, we did a week a year, and over the years, we worked less and less and less during that week because we got better at working remotely that we didn't need to save things for when we were in person anymore. And so during those weeks, it's all about cooking classes, hiking trips, or things that we rent bikes. You know, we've done all sorts of things, but always fun. And the goal there is to really recharge your emotional batteries for when you go back home for the many lonely months that you do working from home.
I have a question about that remote experience. How would I take into account that the people I'm inviting or expecting to come to this in-person event have family and other commitments that they're leaving back where they are?
Yeah, it's a commitment, absolutely. So what we did was we would alternate where we had the retreats, so that it was always near one person's house. So at least that person could stay close to home once in a rotation. For us, we have a big group in Europe, a big group in the US, and so we would alternate between the two. Another thing is we had these very complicated spreadsheets where we asked everybody what week is good for you. And people, depending on the school schedule of the kids, et cetera, would put their preferences. And that works until you're maybe six or seven people in the company. Yeah. After that, you have to give up. But now what we do is we added this concept of virtual retreats, where before we only had one a year and it was in person. And so if you missed that one, you really felt bad. But now we do... Well, we haven't done one in person in a couple of years. So now we do two or three shorter, like 3 days, virtual retreats that everybody can do from home. And I don't know what we're going to do when we get back in person. We might do shorter ones for sure.
Okay. Peldy, I've run into you a couple of times at conferences such as Business of Software and MicroConf. And something notable about that is you always have a entourage with you. Is that also part of your approach to strengthening the remote team?
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think about it that way, although it is an opportunity. It is a good way to get together with your team because you're not just going somewhere. You're going somewhere and learning together and you have something to talk about, right? So the reason it happens for us is because we often sponsor conferences and they give us 3, 4, 5 tickets as part of the sponsorship. And so we ask who in the company wants to go and we go together. But yeah, that could be another way to do it where you're doing something together and learning.
Okay, moving on to my next question I have for you. I also see in your 2021 summary that you do something that you call office hours, not just you, but several people within the organization. Mm-hmm. This caught my attention. Do you want to tell me about it?
Sure. This is a simple little program. We've done it for years now. I'm trying to remember. I think we started officially 2019. And this is a page on our website where people can schedule a meeting for an hour with one of us. There's maybe 7 or 8 of us, Balsamiq staffers. And it is an hour in which we will listen to you and we will try to give you whatever advice we can give you. We have a lot of senior people on the team and we've been around. So a lot of it is career advice or business advice. And you just schedule an hour and then we get online for an hour and we chat about whatever. So I do it every week. I have an hour saved in my calendar every Monday. And I've met so many interesting people that way. What I do specifically is I give business advice, mostly a lot of wannapreneurs or entrepreneurs, first-time entrepreneurs, or usually that's who founders. I meet with founders, and they might have questions about how do I grow my team or culture or strategy or whatever they have. Or sometimes they show me their prototype, and I give them some feedback. So. I started because I was getting a lot of emails from people asking for advice and it was getting a little bit overwhelming. And so I said, I need to pace this out. So why don't we do 1 hour a week and you guys get in line? And so that's how it started. And then I really loved it. I started meeting all these interesting people and it wasn't stressful anymore. It just made it, paced it out well. So it worked so well. And then I convinced a few other people to join me. And now a third of the company is available for advice and they're all meeting with people about different topics. And it's a way for us to give back because we've been around, we've seen things before. So we're always happy to give back. It's a way to meet interesting people. It's hard to do in general. And people like it. We don't advertise it so much on the website, but we've met, how many people did we meet this year? Let me see. 30 people just in 2021.
Lovely.
I recommend that. Everybody should do it.
Yeah, maybe I will do it. I like the idea that you also, it's not just you, but other people in your team. It's nothing so flattering as being asked for advice, I think. And it really shows that their skills and experience is valued and worth something outside of the company.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So it's a branding exercise without you actually intending to be a branding exercise, maybe?
I don't know. I don't care.
I don't know. And you're allergic to terms like branding exercise, aren't you?
We just do it because it's fun and it's helpful and it feels good.
So these first-time entrepreneurs you talk to during your own office hours, are there common problems you see?
Yes. In fact, I wrote some pieces of content for our website in response to the questions that I see. Often they're similar. A lot of people ask, should I get VC or should I do bootstrap, right? And so I wrote a piece addressing that, or how do you do marketing as a programmer, right? So we have something, you know, about that. It's often the similar questions. So it does inform what we share on the website.
Okay. And what is frequent advice that you give to many first-time entrepreneurs? Or is it just, you can't say because it differs so much?
It's quite varied, actually. It's quite varied. Often I say, if it's programmers turned entrepreneurs like me, mm-hmm. I almost always have to say, just stop coding now. The product is good enough. You have to start marketing and user research. Enough with the features, because you're never going to ship it. You know, that's a classic. I think you've seen that before.
Seen it, done it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like many a time. Yeah, my first attempt at a business, that was exactly what went wrong. Uh-huh. Just kept coding until I ran out of money and then realized I didn't have any idea on how to get customers.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But yeah. I think it's getting better. I don't get those anymore so much.
Yeah. I guess like there's so much advice or articles and help around on the internet now that you hear over and over again certain things that back in a decade or two ago that wasn't there for us.
Right. Exactly.
Hey, there's another thing that stood out in your 2021 summary newsletter. So you wrote, we think it might finally be time to do some traditional marketing for a change. We want to hire a senior product marketer in the second half of the year. Now, Paladi, when I read that, my first thought is Paladi is allergic to analytics. Mm-hmm. Marketers these days live on analytics. And this I can see in the short-term future, a little bit of a clash there between you and whoever you hire. What are your thoughts about that?
I share this concern. I'm pretty sure this new marketer is going to hate me. So it's going to be great. It's a great recruiting strategy here. So let's see. The chip on my shoulder that I have with analytics is that people use analytics too early in the process. When you have 10 customers and 100 people come to the website, nothing is statistically relevant. You should absolutely not look at analytics, because the variation day to day is due to chaos, natural mm-hmm. variation. So talk to your customers first. They will tell you exactly what you need to do. And that's what we've been doing for 13 years. And we have heard loud and clear what to work on. And our roadmap basically wrote itself this whole time. But now it's been 14 years. We make a tool. The tool is mature. It's good. We know what to do. We have a few more things that we absolutely know we must do. But we got a handle of it finally. And I feel like analytics are good to optimize, but before you optimize, you got to do the thing. So I feel like maybe now we've done the thing, maybe it's finally time to start optimizing. I know we've been leaving money on the table forever because we barely do any marketing. And I thought maybe there's easy wins here, or things that we could do that are compatible with our value-driven culture. And so maybe it's time to start looking at some analytics and doing some traditional marketing. The other thing that I've seen is that marketing has evolved quite a lot since in the last decade. And they've come closer to my idea of marketing.
Making really good content and really good products and using that.
And mostly it's about serving the user and talking to users, JTBD, et cetera, et cetera. So the way people do marketing now, it's much closer to my idea of marketing. You know, not pushing things in your face and et cetera. So I feel like there's a corner of the marketing world that I'm in sync with. And so I figure maybe it's time.
You're a decade ahead of everyone else, Paladi.
Always.
So this question or this issue stood out in my mind because as I've been building up a team, I've been struggling a little bit with how much do I assert my ideas on how to run things on other people. I used to be a freelance developer, and I would really struggle when I wanted to write code a particular way, but someone senior was saying, no, we don't do it that way here. At this company, we do it this way. And now I'm finding that I'm in danger of being that person myself to my team. And it's a struggle. I have these ideas for a reason, because I believe my way of coding or my way of marketing, et cetera, I believe that they fit in very well with my values and with the company and what I know about the wider ecosystem. But God, it would be annoying to be the person on the other end of that. I'm really struggling with this myself, which is why I'm curious to know more about how you stand with this, not just with marketing, but all the other aspects of your business.
Yeah, that's a common issue. One thing that we do, I noticed that we do, it wasn't really explicit or intentional, but what I've done a lot of times is to hire people. They say, hire people who are better than you always. And if you do that and you tell them, then you tell them how to work, they're not going to be happy. So instead, our strategy has been to hire people who are not very senior, but have a lot of potential, so that at the beginning, you're the one coaching them. But within a year or two, they start learning more and more and get better than you gradually at whatever you hire them to do. And then that's when you gradually pull back and let them run. So this strategy has worked really well for us. We've done it over and over.
Okay, this is expecting that people will stay with you, not for 18 months, but for 10 years.
Yes, which is what happens to us.
Yeah. It's such a unique and refreshing perspective.
Yeah, we think long term.
Yeah. Let's move on to specific advice that you might have for me for Saber Feedback. To set the background, Saber Feedback is the product I acquired 2 years ago from the original founder. It was struggling then, and it's struggling now to really find its place in the market. Last year, you did give me some advice over, I think we were chatting about this, and you gave me what turned out to be a page full of advice, but we're still not getting very far with this. And given the little information you have, though, what any advice you would have on how I could try to get things rolling with Saber Feedback?
Oh my gosh, it's kind of a hard question.
It is a hard question.
I don't have much of information, so I can give you my standard answer, which is, have you talked to the few customers you do have? How much have you talked to them, right? Because obviously you have some paying customers, some people that are happy with it and they decided to pick you. And so you want a lot more people just like them. And so I feel like you need to do whatever you can to really get to know these people and understand their whole journey. Why did they choose you? Who else did they evaluate? What made the classic JTBD interview where, you know, why, what happened the day that you decided to pull the trigger and put the credit card number in Saber Feedback? What is your industry? Who else should we talk to in your industry? Where does your industry get their news? And then you go and sponsor those websites. What events do you guys go to? And then you go and sponsor those events. I think that absolutely do not look at analytics, because it's too small. It's a complete waste of time. Instead, have an hour meeting with your best customers. And if you have five of those meetings, you will have a very clear idea. I promise you, you will have a very clear idea of what to do next.
Okay. For the specifics of that, let's say somebody starts a trial and becomes a paying customer yesterday. At what point would I then contact them to say, can we talk?
Well, so if you have paying customers, I would start with them. Because paying customers are very different than trial customers. They're much more committed. If you have people who report bugs more than others, they're basically begging you to talk to them. If you have a forums for it, for bug reports, etc., and someone is active there, that's a perfect candidate to talk to them. If you don't have those, then take whoever will get you. As soon as they sign up for a trial, make it part of your automated response. Welcome to Saber Feedback. Here's a link to schedule me.
Okay. Okay.
Anyone, put it on every email that you send to them. Put it in the product.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, at the beginning, feedback is more important to you than anything else. What I did at the very beginning was I gave the product away to bloggers. Back then, we had blogs. And I said, I will give it to you in exchange for an honest review because I need to know what you like and what you don't like. You're a blogger, so you have opinions. So please, here's a chance for you to add content to your blog, which is always something that bloggers are struggling with. What should I write about next? And so I did that and I got some great reviews. They told me exactly what I needed to work on next. And as a side effect, it became a marketing thing because now all these blogs were talking about my product. So in fact, I gave people two licenses, one for them to evaluate and one for them to give away to their readers on their blog so that they look good too. But basically, what I'm trying to say is that for the first 6 months, at least, revenue is not a concern. Feedback is so much more valuable to you than revenue.
Great advice. So I think already today I'm going to go and change the email that gets sent to new signups for Sabre Feedback with a link and then saying a little paragraph that's saying, I'd love to hear what you want to achieve with Sabre Feedback. Here's a place you can book a time to call me.
Yeah. And you can make it sound like it's going to be useful for them. I can help you onboard or show you around.
Yeah. I share that fear that I think a lot of developers turned entrepreneurs have of actually talking to customers.
I don't understand that. Why is that?
I'm just not a person who enjoys talking to strangers on the phone. And I realize that's ironic that I have a podcast.
But you enjoy when someone tells you when something is broken so that you can fix it.
Yeah.
These calls are mostly listening. You don't really have to talk much. You can have a script with your five questions that you want to ask. And so you're just reading the script and mostly you're taking notes.
Yep. Hey, another question along these lines. So let's say I'm only getting a handful of trial signups each month. And one of those trial signups said, does your product abide by such and such accessibility standards? Because we're a government organization and we're required by law to do this. What would you do in that situation, given that you don't actually meet the accessibility standards? Well, that you might, but that you haven't gone through the process of confirming this. Would you drop everything and go and do that? Or is that a danger for somebody running at a very early stage of a business?
So this is a delicate subject because I feel like the right thing to do is to bake in accessibility from the beginning. And for a lot of products, that's actually not so hard. You can study a little bit what that means, but there's a lot of literature about it. And if your product is a simple HTML web app, then it's not going to be very hard to make it accessible. You just add tab indexes here and there. And so I think that is the right advice to give, which is just like security, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody has to know how to build secure, non-easily hackable software. You should also learn how to build accessible software.
Mm.
That said, for some products, it is much harder. So we make a drawing tool, and a drawing tool that's accessible still does not exist. Adobe doesn't do it, and they have hundreds of engineers. Because it's visual, it's mouse-driven, drag-and-drop. It's just, we've tried several times and we do still have it on the roadmap to try and help even more. But it is such a incredible investment that obviously at the beginning, you can't do it. You just don't have the resources to do it. Similar to right to left support, right? If you're doing something simple, the browser will help you a lot. But if you're doing a more like a drawing tool like we do, it's super hard. We didn't do it for the first 5-6 years. And so I think that's the advice I would give. Try to make it painless by doing it from the beginning. But maybe your question was more broad, which is...
It was more broad. That was a specific example that happened last week
or
the week before.
Are you SOC 2 compliant or blah, blah, blah. And what we've done always is to be honest and say, no, not yet, because we're too small. And if that's important to you, you should go with a bigger product that is more older, more established, probably less of a good fit for you, but it's the best that you can get because those are your requirements. So there's a reason why enterprise software exists, and there's a reason why it's usually crappy, because the customer is not just the user, but it's the CIO that has to make these decisions based on these limitations.
Paldi, we're running out of time, so let's wrap up, even though I could listen to your advice for easily another hour or two. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. And Steve, my office hours is always open.
I think I better sign up for one, but I think also listeners, it's something you might want to consider doing.
I'd love to meet more people, more listeners of the show. Absolutely.
When you get onto Paldi's office hours, listeners, tell them Steve sent you. Okay. Bye, Paldi.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye, everybody.